We are reading from Nehemiah 4, from verses 1 to the end. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, bent as they are?" Tobiah, the Amorite, who was at his side, said, "What are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones. Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in the land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people wept with their heart. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs and the Amorites and the people of Ashdod heard that the repairs of Jerusalem walls had gone ahead and the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people of Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall." Also, our enemies said, "Before they know it and see us, we will be right there among them and we will kill them and put an end to the work." Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, "Wherever you turn, they will attack us." Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest point of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families, their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things up, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and he fights for your families, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes." When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the war, each to our own work. From that day on, half of my men did the work while the other half were equipped with spears, shields, bows, and armor. The officers posted themselves behind the wall and all the people of Judah who were rebuilding the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held another with a weapon. And each of the builders wore his sword at his side as he worked. But the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. Then I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "The work is extensive and spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us." So we continued the work with half of the men holding spears from the first light of dawn till the stars came out. At that time, I also said to the people, "Have every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night, so they can serve us as guards by night and as workers by day. Neither I, nor my brothers, nor my men, nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when they went for water. May the Lord bless his reading of his word.
Good morning. When Igor Sikorsky was 12, his parents told him that competent authorities had already proved that human flight was impossible. But when he grew up to be an adult, Sikorsky designed, flew, and mass-produced the world's first helicopter. In his American factory, he posted this sign. According to recognized aerotechnical tests, the bumblebee cannot fly because of the shape and weight of his body in relation to the total wing area. The bumblebee does not know this, so he goes ahead and flies anyway. Sikorsky and Nehemiah have much in common. Both were visionary. Both faced opposition. Both were determined and both persevered. And both put their trust and faith in God, for Sikorsky himself came from a family of Russian Orthodox priests and was an author of Christian books. Nehemiah demonstrated extraordinary leadership qualities. Prayerful and practical, passionate yet pragmatic, positive but persevering, purposeful and a planner. Wouldn't Nehemiah be the man to manage Watford in the Premiership? He certainly knew how to build a defensive wall. Well, staying with our football analogy, let's take our talk in two halves. First, looking at the context of our passage and the types of opposition that Nehemiah faced. And then, after a song, we'll look at how we can learn from the prayerful and practical ways in which Nehemiah responded. David Eaton helpfully set the scene for us a fortnight ago when he introduced the first two books of the first two chapters of the book of Nehemiah. And we're here in the Middle East. The Assyrian Empire has come and gone. It's been replaced by the Kingdom of Babylon. Vast, mighty, unprincipled, and brutal. Because of the unfaithfulness of God's people in Israel and Judah, they've been captured and carried off into captivity more than 500 miles from home. The Jews have spent many years in captivity, and now a third nation conquers the Babylonian Empire. This time it's the kingdom of the Medes and Persians, headed by Cyrus. And it's he who has the enlightened policy to release the Jews to go home, bringing the days of the exile to a close. And many do go back home, but many also stay. And one of those is Nehemiah, cupbearer to King Artaxerxes himself. As we discovered in chapters 1 and 2, Nehemiah had the opportunity to explain to the king that the walls of Jerusalem were in ruins, and this prompted Artaxerxes to release Nehemiah to go back and to rebuild them. So here we have the story about the reconstruction of the walls. But isn't this just a load of fuss about some old ruins? To understand the significance of our story, we need to realise its importance as part of national reconstruction. Part one was the restoration of the temple, the spiritual shrine at the centre. That's been achieved by the wonderfully named Zerubbabel, who it's rumoured was the Middle East Scrabble champion. Part two, the laws have been reinstated under Ezra, the scribe. And now part three, the city walls are being rebuilt under the guidance of Nehemiah, despite considerable opposition. And that's where we pick up our story today. This isn't just about bricks and mortar. This is spiritual work. A proper city with proper walls, boundaries and defences is part of the Jewish witness. And chapter 3 gives us literally a meter by meter account of the construction of 42 different sections, beginning at the sheep gate and going around each section of the perimeter until we get right back to the sheep gate again. It tells us who did what and where and how they did it. But chapter 4, which we looked at for our reading this morning, gives us the inside track on the opposition faced by Nehemiah and his team of builders. In fact, in the opening verses, we encounter no less than 6 different types of opposition. I wonder if you notice them. As a church and as Christians, we will face opposition. But the first defense against the enemy is to be aware of the types of opposition that he uses. Let's look at the different forms of opposition, and then in the second half we'll explore how we are to respond. The book of Nehemiah names 3 particular opponents literally encircling Jerusalem. First we have Sanballat. He's the governor of Samaria to the north. Then we come across Tobiah. That's a Hebrew name. He's from the east. And then there's Geshem, he's an Arab, he's from the south. They all first came into our story in chapter 2, verse 19. And so, to the west is, of course, another enemy, the sea. Sanballat bobs up again for us in verse 1 of our chapter, chapter 4. And he exemplifies the first type of opposition. Verse 1. He's angry. And in verse 7, he's described as furious. The Hebrew word actually means burning mad. A secure and independent Jerusalem would threaten his hold on the area, undermining his control of the trade route through the region, and so damage his economy. Satan may use the anger of others to prevent us from living out our commitment to the Lord. But if that doesn't stop the work, then Satan hauls out another tool. It's there again in our opening verses. Ridicule and sarcasm. Verse 1, ridicule. Verse 2, that ridicule is expressed through a barrage of rhetorical questions about how feeble the Jews are, about their faith, about the raw materials they're using, about how long it's all going to take. And then in verse 3, Tobiah chips in his 4 penneth about how hopeless the whole project is and that the wall will just collapse at the slightest disturbance. Maybe we face taunts in our workplaces, or people are watching us, longing for us to fail, so they can call us hypocrites. As Christians, at work, we're often in a massive minority. As you may know, only 2% of those in their 20s actually go to church. How do we build resilient disciples? But the Jews kept building. So then we move on to tactic number 3, threats and intimidation. And we find those in verses 8 and 11. Verse 8, they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. And verse 11 tells us that the enemies were planning to kill the Jews if necessary. Faith lived out may come at a cost and with risk attached. And then there's tactic number 4. It's there in verse 10. Discouragement and exhaustion. Verse 10. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. This isn't an easy time for the builders. They've had the euphoria and excitement and adrenaline of delivering the first half of the project. We got there by verse 6. but the finishing line still isn't in sight. It's all becoming a bit of a slog. I wonder, do you sometimes feel like that? It's all a bit of a duty, a bit of a chore, if we're honest with ourselves. Another Zoom service, another church meeting. Lockdown is limiting, COVID is constraining, and the absence of fellowship can be frustrating. And that can easily lead us to the devil's tactic number 5, negativity. And that comes in verse 12. Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack us. When I read that, I have to say my first reaction was, only 10 times? But the key point here is that whereas the opposition of Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, which comes in chapter 6, is from outside, in verse 12, this opposition is internal. It's criticism from within the fellowship. How dispiriting and draining and deflecting and defeatist is that? Negativity is the enemy of faith. It's not unique to this passage. It's entirely consistent with the message of those who were sent to explore Canaan in the book of Numbers. This is what they said. There are giants and we're like grasshoppers. We can't possibly do it. And these come together in Satan's 6th ploy. And that's fear, as we read about in verse 14. Worn down by opposition, anger and mockery and threats, and worn out by exhaustion and the doom and gloom of their fellow Jews, the people are afraid. Maybe we are paralyzed by fear. Fear of failure. Fear of rejection. Fear of losing friendships. Fear of conflict. And the New Testament tells us of the inevitability of opposition. In John 15, Jesus tells us that the world will hate us. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus alerts us to persecution. In Acts 14, Paul tells us that there may be tribulation and suffering. And in 1 Peter, we're told not to be surprised at opposition. But wonderfully, this isn't the end, because in our second half, we'll hear the amazing attitudes and actions from Nehemiah, which provide us with an inspiring example of just how the opposition was overcome, how the walls were rebuilt, and how God's name was glorified. Central to that, as we'll see, was prayer. And our next song reminds us of that priority. Are we weak and heavy laden? Take it to the Lord in prayer. To those of you watching at home, welcome back. We've seen that Nehemiah and his Jewish team have faced all kinds of opposition in their quest to rebuild the wall. Opposition that's external and internal, aggressive and subtle. And yet they press on with their goal, focused on God and the task in hand, looking upwards to God, looking sideways to each other, and always keeping a watchful eye outwards in the case of an attack from their enemies. We're told about their success. Spoiler alert coming. It's there in chapter 6, verse 15. The wall is completed in 52 days. That's quite some achievement. This isn't a wall like we have at the entrance to Fairfield. Archaeologists tell us that the wall was 9 feet thick. 52 days without any modern machinery. To put that in context, the old Wembley Stadium was built in 300 days at a cost of £750,000. the new Wembley Stadium took 4 years to build at a cost of £800 million. You may know that it was in January 1971, now more than 50 years ago, that the Roskill Commission recommended the site for the third London airport. And that's never been built. So, what are the spiritual secrets of success we can learn from Nehemiah, which we can apply today, some 2,500 years later? Nehemiah combines prayer and practical precautions. Last time, David reminded us of the prayers of chapter 1 and 2. Chapter 1 is devoted to prayer. In chapter 2, verse 4, Nehemiah prays. Here, chapter 4, verse 9, there's prayer. Verse 14, they remembered the Lord. Chapter 6 and 7 to come, Nehemiah looks to the Lord to strengthen his hands and to guide. Prayer is a first reaction, not a last resort when all our human efforts have failed. For Nehemiah, prayer is as natural as breathing. Prayer is God's chosen way to bring about his will in lives and situations. We pray, he works. Prayer in the face of opposition in the Bible isn't limited to Nehemiah. We read about the apostles in Acts 4, for example, committed to prayer and continuing the work. Yesterday marked the centenary of the birth of John Stott. In 2005, Time magazine voted him one of the most influential 100 people in the world. In their magazine, he shared a double-page spread with Bill Gates. When he was in his late 80s, John Stott was asked, if you could have your life again, what would you change? And he replied, I would pray more. It was Martin Luther who famously once said, work, work from morning until late at night. In fact, I have so much to do that I shall have to spend the first 3 hours in prayer. Nehemiah and the people prayed, but they didn't stop working. Can we, individually and as a church, prioritize prayer? But Nehemiah isn't so heavenly minded that he's of no earthly use. He uses passion, practical planning, persuasive partnerships, perseverance, and one preeminent priority to achieve his target and defeat his enemies. Let's briefly see those in action from our Bible reading. Chapter 4, verse 6. So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. This is enthusiastic commitment. Verse 16, the workers gave up their times of rest because they were so committed to the Lord's work. This is something we looked at, didn't we, in our Frontline Sundays series in the autumn. There we looked at Colossians 3:23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. Whatever we do, the work of our hands, paid or unpaid, however small and insignificant it may seem, matters to God. It's part of our worship and how we serve others and bear witness to God. Prayer, passion, and thirdly, he's a practical planner. As you know, here at Fairfield, we're so grateful to David Petrovich, who, with the support of Howard, has been overseeing the building project on the pastor's house to get it ready for Paul and Tanya and the family. it's been truly awe-inspiring to see David's planning and thoroughness and commitment to quality in the service of God. Well, here, Nehemiah is also meticulous in his attention to detail. As Churchill said, he who fails to plan is planning to fail. And in our passage, we see a whole raft of practical ways that Nehemiah plans and takes action. Chapter 2, he organizes the raw materials he needs and carefully researches the scale of the task. Chapter 3, he organizes his 42 teams into their different sections. Chapter 4, verse 9, he posts sentries day and night. Verse 13, he organizes swords and spears and bows. Verse 16 and 17, the work is divided up, but weapons are always to hand. He carefully sets up a communications channel. Now, this is 2,500 years before Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And the infrastructure is not quite like President Trump, who famously released 2,608 tweets in his first year in the White House. There's no Trump, but Nehemiah has a trumpeter constantly at his side who can sound the alarm and summon support. It's there in verse 18. Nehemiah has a combination of faith and action. Or as Cromwell famously put it, trust in God and keep your powder dry. Nehemiah, prayerful, passionate, and a practical planner. Next, persuasive partnerships. In chapter 1, he says, I want to build the wall. In chapter 2, he persuades his colleagues, let us start rebuilding. Chapter 3, so we continued the work. You can't build a 9-foot thick wall in 52 days on your own. It needs teamwork and collaboration and partnership. And if you notice, the teams are organized in family units. You can see that in verse 12, because you fight hardest for those who you love most deeply. Verse 16, they covered for each other. Everyone is in it together. How fortunate we are as a church to have so many skills and so many volunteers. Is there more we might do? Is there more we might volunteer for? Are there ways we might work even more effectively in partnership? Next, perseverance. Nehemiah has faced non-stop opposition, ridicule, intimidation, fear and exhaustion, but he carries on with determination. Nothing will deflect him from delivery. Verse 15, each returned to the wall, each to his own work. Verse 23, neither I nor my brothers, nor my men, nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when he went for water. Let's hope that after 52 days, the local launderette wasn't in lockdown. I love the story of Thomas Edison's determination to invent the light bulb. Try as he might, and brilliant though he was, he struggled to make the critical breakthrough. When faced with criticism, this is what he said. I have not failed 10,000 times. I have not failed once. I have succeeded in proving that those 10,000 ways will not work. When I have eliminated the ways that will not work, I will find the way that will work. A Christian leader was asked the other day, what's the hallmark of a disciple? And his answer was stickability. The great old hymn puts it this way, O Jesus, I have promised to serve thee to the end. perseverance. Finally, Nehemiah had one preeminent priority, and it's there in verse 14. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. Or in verse 20, our God will fight for us. The people became discouraged when their focus switched onto the enemy's threats, the piles of rubble and all the work left to do. But Nehemiah rightly directs their focus back to their great and awesome God. We are not alone. When opposition comes, it's easy to take our focus off the Lord and look at instead at all our problems. When Peter got out of the boat, he started to sink when he took his focus off Jesus. As Paul instructs us in Colossians 3, set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on earth. As the song puts it, turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. For Nehemiah, prayer and practical precautions went together. Faith and action go together. Action without prayer is futile. But prayer without action would have been foolish. The historian Will Durrant once observed, the Roman Empire remained great as long as she had enemies who forced her to unity, vision, and heroism. When she had overcome all her enemies, she flourished for a moment and then began to die. Opposition kept Rome strong. If we know Christ and we try to do anything for him, we will experience opposition, both as individuals and as a church. But Nehemiah shows us how to respond. With prayer, with passion, with practical planning, by pursuing partnerships, through perseverance, and by one preeminent priority, keeping our focus on the great and awesome God whom we serve. Amen.